Actually, I had a different one planned a while back, the one I was going to do last week, and I thought I would do it this week. But Lori had mentioned something in Bible class last Wednesday, and I said, you know, that's a really great idea, great thought. And I started writing it down, and I thought, oh, this will make a really good short talk. And it kept getting longer and longer. So you got a lesson now. And when I wrote it up, I put it up on the website thinking, well, I'll just schedule it for sometime later. And I got all these comments back saying, oh, I can't wait to hear this. So I said, well, I guess I need to move this up earlier. So this is how it was all started. But the observation that started out, and I don't know the exact quote, I can't remember now. But basically, temptation comes because fear is removed. And that point is so true. If you actually go back to Genesis chapter 2, God warned Adam and Eve, originally just Adam there, but then Adam would have passed it on to Eve. But God warned Adam that death would come if the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was eaten. In Genesis chapter 2 and in verse 16. So the Lord God commanded the man, saying, from any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die. That's pretty strong language just for eating a piece of fruit. If you think about it, God meant to give Adam some fear about this particular tree. And what's interesting is when Satan, in the form of a serpent, appears to Eve, notice in chapter 3, verse 4, the serpent said to the woman, you surely will not die. The start of the temptation was removing the fear. The fear of death in this particular case. And then that's when he started hitting her with the other temptations. If you think about King David, David got into temptation. It was when he was king, he was sheltered in Jerusalem. His armies had gone off. He was left behind because, well, he's king. You can't be in the army now. You can't risk your life. And kings can do as they please and not fear the consequences. And you start thinking about it, that's what leads David into finding a woman, asking her to come over and committing adultery, and then trying to hide it with murder. It started, though, with a removal of fear. Or if you think about Jesus and his temptations in the wilderness, why in the wilderness? Why did Satan wait until then? Because it's a lonely place where no one sees you. And it removes an element of fear. Now think another point. Maybe it sounds a little different, but why do we have brakes on cars? They just slow you down. You could save a lot of gas with the less weight if you didn't have brakes there. And the maintenance costs, you got to keep paying for the new brake pads and all that other stuff. Think about how much money you could save and have no brakes on the car. And it might sound good until you need to stop. And you can't. Keep that in mind and turn over to Romans chapter 1. Paul describes the fall of the Greek society. I know if you look in most schools and you think about evolution and stuff like that, they tell you that the idea of monotheism and things like that was a recent development. And the Bible tells us, no, it's the other way around. Polytheism is a recent development. The world started out monotheistic. But what happened at the beginning in verse 18? For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. People ought to be scared of God for who he is. There is a wrath that God has against unrighteousness. But the Greek society discarded their knowledge of God. In verse 21 it says, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. They got rid of God in their mind, replaced him with gods of their own making. But the problem is, God ought to be feared. And when you get rid of God, then you can replace it with what you want. And the result was sexual sins. Take a look at verse 24. Therefore God gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. Amen. But it didn't stop there, because they had no breaks. They had no fear of God. And for this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for the women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in desire towards one another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. The result was homosexuality, degradedness. But it didn't stop there. You keep on in verse 28. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. See, we're back to that same point. They left God out of the equation. God gave them over to a depraved mind to do the things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They were gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful, and all they all know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but they give hearty approval to those who practice them. There ought to be a fear of God. What stops a society from going to chaos? Fear of the consequences. Fear of God's wrath. But the Greeks threw away the brakes. And their auto, if you will, their society just went crazy. Not all at once, but it kept picking up speed and then it couldn't stop. You know, one time in our society, and I'm not that old, I'm getting old, but I'm not that old, but I can remember a time when there was a real fear among young women, a fear of pregnancy or disease. And then people started promoting condoms and birth control pills. But you know, those take away the fear that something might happen. There was also a fear of abortions, because people died. But now they're commonplace. They're easy to get. People do it without thinking. And what's the result? Well, fornication's rampant. It's all over the place. I was reading one statistics, and you know, there's somewhere somebody will commit fornication. They got it odds up to about like 90%. somewhere during their lifetime. I hope it's not that high. I hope that statistic's off. But it's rampant. It's all over the place. Where did it start? Well, we took away the fear. And it sounded like a good thing at the beginning. You know, when HIV broke out, I remember when that started hitting the world scene. It was very quick to get reported in the news. It's not just a homosexual disease. Though by far, those who were being affected by it were homosexuals. Why did they do that? Well, there was an agenda going on. People wanted to promote homosexuality. They didn't want people fearing it. And it took away the fear. I used to do genealogy. And one of the things that's really, really notable to me is you go back beyond 1920, go earlier than 1920, it is rare to find anyone who was divorced. You just every once in a blue moon you might find a record. But it was really rare. And then somewhere around the 20s, especially by the time you get to the 40s, it's so prevalent, you get start getting lost in trying to keep track of whose kids are whose. Because it becomes so prevalent. What happened in that little time period? Well, see, there used to be a huge societal stigma against divorce. One of the reasons for that is if somebody wanted to get a divorce, you had to go to court. You had to prove why the other person was unfit to be a spouse. Usually you had to prove that they had committed adultery. Which means you had to have evidence, and it was a court case. And it was down on record, recorded at the courthouse, why this divorce ended, why this marriage ended in divorce. You know what happened? Oh, that's too tough. That's too difficult. And so they removed the requirements so that we had no-fault divorce. And now, at the courthouse, if you look at records, all it says is some irreconcilable difference. It tells you nothing about what actually happened. And what happened? The fear of the stigma has been removed. Anybody can do it. Nobody knows why. It still remains hidden. And now suddenly divorce is commonplace. So fewer people work out their marital problems. Instead, they just end the marriages. You can also look at little things like, you know, when the attacks on this country happened, 9/11 and all that. It's noted that far more believers in Islam are involved in it than you would expect. But oh, we can't talk about that. There was a push to promote Muslim beliefs, Islam, even in this country. So you can't point that out because that goes against what people want to promote. Another one I started thinking about, the moral chaos. Marijuana has been classified since the 1800s as a dangerous drug. I actually ran across a few articles back in the 1800s where they point out the marijuana users, they knew there's something wrong with this because more than the usual number of people who used it became what we would now call schizophrenic. That's why it was put on a drug classification. Because the odds of becoming mentally ill was so high that people were scared of it. But I remember in the 60s and the 70s, people kept saying, oh, marijuana's not that bad of a drug. It's a mild one compared to some of the things, you know, like cocaine or heroin or stuff like that. It's not that dangerous. You know what they did? They removed the fear of it. Now we've got whole states legalizing it for recreational use. And oh, by the way, you know what has been happening? People are noting that the odds of schizophrenia is going way up. People are going crazy. Oh, but they're not talking about it. We can't talk about that because that goes against the agenda. And I find that fascinating. People fear tobacco because secondhand smoke. Why not fear a drug that's actually causing people to lose their sanity? You know what? The writer of Ecclesiastes, asking what about the purpose of life, he said the whole conclusion, when you look at everything that he examined, the final conclusion of the whole matter is that we need to fear God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and in verse 13, it says, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. We need to fear God. Jesus told us in Matthew chapter 10, and this one's an interesting verse because you got so many people that keep talking about, oh, you know, Christ is all about love. And he is. Don't get me wrong. But it's half the picture. In Matthew 10 and verse 28, Jesus says, do not fear those who kill the body and are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. What should we do with God? We ought to fear him. Because God is able to destroy us in hell. Have you ever wondered why people argue that there's no hell? Their whole denominations have voted on that. Episcopals have voted on that. Presbyterians have been voting on that. Methodists have been voting on it. There's no hell. As if man can vote. It's like the criminals getting together and saying, hey, there's no jails. It doesn't work that way. What are they doing? They're removing the fear of the consequences of sin. We should be fearing God. We should be fearing not making it to heaven. Take a look at Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 4. In verse 1. Therefore, let us fear if, while promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. We ought to be scared of not making it, because if we don't make it to heaven, we end up in hell. Because of that, then we should fear leaving the truth. Take a look at Hebrews chapter 10. In verse 27, Hebrews 10, 27. Actually, I'm going to start at 26. For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving a knowledge of truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a terrifying expectation of judgment and the fury of a fire which will consume the adversaries. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severe punishment do you think he will deserve, who has trampled under his foot the Son of God, and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified, and has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And again, the Lord will judge his people. It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And yet, sins have been legalized in various states, and problems rise. And what we find is people denying that there are any problems. It's really not as bad as you might think, according to the world. Have you ever thought about what motivated Noah? Noah was a man of righteousness. So he followed God, right? But look at what motivated him. Hebrews 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about the things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for salvation for the household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. And that translation is actually kind of mild. Because it says reverence there, but it actually is the word fear. Why did Noah build the ark? He was scared of what God was about to do. That's what motivated him. His fear. That's why Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 7. And in verse 1. It says, therefore, having these promises, talking about the promises of salvation in heaven, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of the God. How do you become better? How do you mature your holiness? You got to be scared of the consequences. You have to be scared of God. Take a look at, if that's not enough, take a look at Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12. So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. How do we become better Christians? We got to fear the consequences. I deal with people all the time that are addicted to various things. Probably the most common one I get is young men who are addicted to pornography. You know what the biggest problem is? There's no fear. Oh, they're disgusted by it. They don't like it. But there's really no fear. Because it's watched privately where nobody else is watching. And that fear is gone. We want to get better. We got to fear God. In fact, Proverbs chapter 8. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13. It says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate. How do we get better? I got to start out by fearing God. Fearing the consequence. Understand it's real. And that my life is on the line. In fact, we're back to why Satan wishes to remove our fear of sinning. Because it's so much easier to get people to get into temptation, give into it, if they don't fear the consequences. Now, to keep this balanced at least a little bit, there is a problem of misplaced fear. Misplaced fear can stop you from doing what is right. For instance, there are people who are afraid of other people. Going back to Matthew 10 and verse 28, saying, "Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to fear the soul or kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows worth sold for a cent? And yet no one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. The very hairs of your heads are all numbered. So do not fear, you are more valuable than many sparrows." We can get scared of people and let them drive us into doing things that we ought not to do. We can be scared of people and not do the things we ought to do. We need to be scared of God, but not scared of men. Interesting, sometimes people are scared of surprises. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs 3 and verse 25. "Do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor on the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught." Sometimes we call it the fear of the unknown. That's what a lot of people think. This might happen. This might happen. Oh, if I do this. And we let those fears of things that we just don't know stop us from doing what's right. And then there's also the problem of suffering. In Revelation 2 and verse 10. Revelation 2 and verse 10. Sometimes we know what's going to happen. And we know it's going to be unpleasant. And Jesus tells in Revelation 2 verse 10, he says, "Do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, and you will be tested, and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life." We cannot fear unpleasant results. None of us wants to suffer. But I ought to fear God more than any discomfort here on earth. In that reading that we had from Lamentations, in Lamentations chapter 3, while we ought to fear God and fear the consequences, and that should keep us out of sin, at the same time, we don't need to fear the future. If we're doing what is right, if we're following after God, then with God on our side, then there's no need to fear. In the Lamentations chapter 3, verse 55, it says, "I called on your name, O Lord, out of the lowest pit. You have heard my voice. Do not hide your ear from my prayer for relief, from my cry for help. You drew near when I called on you. You said, 'Do not fear.' O Lord, you have pleaded my soul's cause. You have redeemed my life." Jeremiah went through some really rough times. Difficult times. Rejected by his own people. And yet God says, "You don't need to fear because I'm there." And Jeremiah said, "I don't need to fear because God has saved me." How do we live our lives? Do we lose the fear of God and go off into sin? Or we keep the fear of God, which makes us confident that we're doing what God wants and where we're going? I hope you'll think about those things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no time better than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.